Welcome to the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference Podcast. This podcast features a conference keynote session presented by Jolene Kester, President of California State University, Northridge. Her session is entitled Confessions of a University President, Information Technology, and University Leadership.
As Mark indicated, I've been president at Cal State Northridge since the summer of 2000. And as he hinted at, I came to the president's role through the traditional route. I started as an assistant professor in communication studies. I became department chair. Then I took a position in academic administration with wider university responsibilities. By the time I became vice president for academic affairs and provost at Cal State Sacramento, I'm here to tell you I knew the academic side of the institution pretty well. In addition to fulfilling those traditional provostian responsibilities, I also learned a great deal about the university's budget, about personnel, about reading financial statements, about student services. I began to learn about fundraising and honing in on instincts the president needs with respect to the public reputation of the university. However, information technology reported to the vice president for administration and finance. And frankly, it remained almost a complete mystery to me. I associated the functions in information technology with good, competent people who did things I didn't understand. I associated them with issues, problems, and goals that really weren't that important, imperative to me. Then, with a change in personnel, one morning I woke up and information technology reported to me. So with that decision began my quest to serve well as a leader and manager of information technology. I've been involved in numerous system technology efforts as a faculty member, as a provost, and for the last 8 years, I've served on a presidential level technology steering committee for the CSU, advising the chancellor on major technology initiatives. I've had multiple baptisms. I've had multiple tutorials. I've learned an enormous amount. Now, I tell you this part of my story because my guess is that many of you have presidents who've had a similar career trajectory. A president's level of knowledge and comfort with the work of leading with and through information technology is frankly not typically as strong as his or her knowledge in other parts of the university. This leads me to the confessions. When I became president of Cal State Northridge about 10 years ago, the university did have a CIO in place. About half of his responsibilities were in information technology, and half of them were in resources for one of the other divisions of the university. So he reported halfway to me and halfway to another senior officer in the university. There I was, president, with very limited information technology background, but responsible for information technology functioning well, for ensuring that we planned well for technology in the university's future. It was very, very challenging, even in those parts of the university that I knew very, very well. But with information technology, let me simply confess publicly my unease, and yes, to be honest, even my anxiety. I worked really hard to learn the right questions to ask, to learn the vocabulary, which was a constantly changing phenomena. I worked to learn to probe beyond those first-level responses I got from the CIO and the others in information technology. I initially chose trust. I migrated to some micromanagement. I sometimes turned to outside help to help me identify the right questions to ask and even to help me understand the available choices that might be answers to those questions on key issues. I sometimes felt like I was holding warm jello, and that warm jello was dripping through my fingers and down my sleeve into my armpits. That is not very presidential. It's not dignified. But that is how I felt. So I'm simply saying I haven't always felt assured and confident while leading information technology. Now, I got some solace from some presidential colleagues who said, "Don't worry, Jolene. You need to think about information technology as if it is a utility. It's like electricity. It's like water. And all you have to worry about as president is making sure that there's reliable information technology, like reliable electricity and water." And I will tell you that that did make me feel good some of the time, because that seemed achievable. Well, I don't really understand electricity. I felt like I could hire people who would understand the equivalent of electricity in information technology, and they could throw those switches in the right way. But I have to tell you, over the last several years, it's become really clear to me that the role of information technology in my university is far more strategic, far more ubiquitous, far more integrated into multiple business processes, and far more integral to the core university function of teaching and learning. I no longer regard as valid the comparison of information technology to utilities. And thus, I stand before you today and confess that disquiet still occurs. Another confession: I have recently served as the chair of ASCU, the American Association of State Colleges and Universities Board of Directors. In that role, I had to come up with a theme for the 2009 annual meeting of the presidents and chancellors in that association. And I had a very difficult time initially zeroing in on what it was I wanted to focus on in that theme. There are just so many challenges, issues, problems, changing circumstances for U.S. public comprehensive universities. My difficulty in choosing that theme ended, however, when I asked myself two questions. The first question was, which of the challenges or issues has the capacity to fundamentally change the nature of my university over the next decade? The second question I asked, it was more personal and certainly more confessional, and that question was, with which part of the university and my decision-making am I the least comfortable? The unequivocal, clear, top answer to both of those questions was and still is information technology. So I easily then moved to shape a theme focused on leading tomorrow's university today that allowed my fellow presidents and chancellors to focus and learn on the ways in which their colleges and universities were changing. We learned about the challenges of today's digital students coming to our analog colleges and universities. We learned about gesture-based computing. We all wanted to have the little gizmo when we left that presentation. We heard for the first time and learned about sourcing. We'd heard about the cloud, but sourcing was new for almost all of us. And we learned how information technology is transforming instruction and learning, moving our colleges and universities from teaching as delivering knowledge to instruction as facilitating discovery. And you know what? My colleagues at that conference confessed to me, both privately and publicly, that they too are challenged to understand and feel comfortable in making decisions big and small. No one said that they felt like they were holding warm jello. That's mine. I'm from Minnesota, and if you grow up in the Midwest, you grow up with jello. But nevertheless, they confess pleasure at being able to learn about a key part of their university. Now, my final confession to all of you: if I could start this career in higher education all over, I would immerse myself in your world. UN information technology have the potential for absolutely the most exciting present and most exciting future work in our colleges and universities. Out of your expertise and vision, in partnerships with the rest of your institutions, sometimes in partnerships with other institutions, will emerge major transformation and redefinition of the role and contributions of universities. You're at the center of it. You are at the center of what will change U.S. higher education. You're at the core of the beat, of the excitement, of the energy, of the synergy that's going to shape the colleges and universities of the future. Now, when you hear me say to you that you are at the core, it's pretty obvious where I go next, and that's to give you advice. I'm going to discuss with you and provide advice on four key elements of a president's work. So let's begin with the first. I consider this to be foundational. That is having a strategic focus. In the words of one of my experienced colleague presidents, effective presidents are those who pursue a limited number of high priority strategic goals, stay focused on them with intentionality and discipline. A highly regarded translator of this perspective for organizational leaders is Jim Collins. I'm sure many of you have read his very popular book, Good to Great. Collins describes great organizations as having a relentless culture of discipline. With disciplined people who engage in disciplined thought and who take disciplined action. This relentless focus on strategic priorities is tough to achieve. There are innumerable other worthy goals and objectives. There are circumstances that generate high priority efforts that leadership teams need to pay attention to. There are always people within our colleges and universities who don't want to accept the strategic focuses, foci that have been set. They want you to do a different goal. And there are always attractive alternatives for the institution's priorities and the institution's staff time, energy, and resources. But I'm here to tell you, strategic focus is absolutely essential. Without strategic focus, you do not achieve improvement and change because we simply cannot accomplish everything that there is to do. My university, for example, has for almost 10 years been strategically focused on 5 planning priorities. We start every year with a plan around those 5 priorities. They're our filter and guide for macro and micro decisions. This means that what we do in information technology at Cal State Northridge is guided and controlled by those university-determined planning priorities. You as information technology professionals increase your own personal and organizational effectiveness if you understand your institution's strategic focus. If you appreciate the necessity to be fully 100% oriented to that focus. As you try to persuade the person you report to of the importance or the need of a particular project, for example, you would do well to link your argument, to tie it to your institution's strategic focus. In order to do that well, IT needs a robust IT governance structure. It's got to involve constituents from all parts of the university. That appropriate consultative structure has to allow you to listen carefully to those who are concerned about what the institution needs technology to do, but frankly, those who are less immersed in the capabilities and limitations of specific technologies than you are. Remember, IT exists to support, empower, and advance the university's educational mission. You would do well to seek institutional leaders' input about what is and is not working. Be prepared to listen. Be prepared to act on what it is you have heard. Be prepared to recognize that what you want to do may not be what others want or need you to do. The second area I want to talk about in terms of advice and presidential competencies, I know you have already had a pretty invigorating plenary speaker about, and that is dealing with change. The work of a university president is about managing change. Now, I've confessed to you that I believe information technology has set in motion fundamental changes to the nature of higher education, and that all of you are in the catbird seat in terms of agents of transformation. But you and I also know that change does not come easily to colleges or universities. We're organizations with structures and values that protect the status quo. The governance of the modern university has in place deeply embedded processes that constrain and control change. Yet change is necessary and, frankly, inevitable. Very shortly after I became president at Northridge, I heard a presidential colleague talk about managing change at his university. This was a really, really important and influential set of insights that this colleague offered. He described the managing change process as a dialectic, a good academic word, but more importantly, as a balancing act between what he called the covenant of change and the covenant of tradition. That description really had a profound impact on me because I realized that while I needed to both push and pull change, I also needed, in order to accomplish the change I wanted, I needed to honor the current environment. I needed to balance aggressive initiatives and efforts with periods of rest and consolidation. I needed to understand that change sometimes required letting things sit. Be purposeful in slowing change as well as being purposeful in pushing change. One of the sessions I teach at the New President's Academy leads me to the third area of advice and competency, and that's building a team and shaping the organization. I challenge my new colleagues from the very beginning of their presidencies to build a strong collaborative leadership team. Patrick Lencioni, another very popular author and consultant who works with organizations, lays out the imperative. Not finance, not strategy, not technology. It's teamwork that remains the ultimate competitive advantage, both because it is so powerful and because it is so rare. My emphasis on building a collaborative team to lead the university demands the use of an all-university frame for decision-making. Operating in silos does not help an institution achieve its strategic focus. I believe that any president is only as good and will only be as successful as the quality and the competence of his or her vice presidents. Doesn't matter how smart or capable I am. Without vice presidents who are competent, committed, and willing and able to work collaboratively, I, as president, cannot and will not be successful. The work on my campus happens because the senior leadership team sets the agenda together and moves it. If there are those of you in the audience who are CIOs, or who aspire to that role, understand that today's CIO needs a different set of skills than was adequate just a decade or two ago. Some of you may have seen and read the recent ECAR research bulletin titled The Future CIO, Critical Skills and Competencies. If you haven't, and you have those aspirations, you should get this publication. Critical competencies include a strategic institutional perspective, communication, outreach capabilities, and the ability to collaborate effectively. It is my firm belief that given the centrality of information technology to achieving my university's future, the CIO should be a vice president and is part of the president's cabinet. In turn, it's my responsibility to ensure that the entire senior leadership team, the other vice presidents, the head of our auxiliaries, my chief of staff, that all of us are engaged collaboratively with information technology planning issues and outcomes. Our provost, for example, works closely with Vice President Baker. Theirs is a partnership almost daily in its interaction, and right now the two of them are leading our IT strategic information planning effort for Cal State Northridge's vision of IT 2015. My advice then to any vice president for information technology, CIO, or aspirant of such in the audience is to understand that your role is to support and advance and embrace this all-university collaborative leadership role. It is one of university vice president or university senior officer. It is first and foremost university, not information technology. Become mindful of and conversant with your university's strategic plan. Get involved in that planning process if you haven't been, and contribute as a university leader. I will make one side comment, and that is that I'm sure all of you understand the importance, the critical importance of keeping the basic information technology infrastructure working, reliably working well. When basic and key systems don't work, the information technology vice president loses credibility, and his or her ability to be an all-university vice president is diminished. Another session I teach at the new President's Academy centers on communication. Pretty obviously why, in terms of my academic background. In that session, we look at both communication skills, but most importantly, a president's role in shaping both internal and external audiences' understanding of the strength and mission of the university. I am acutely aware that my communication, my verbal, my nonverbal communication, my formal, my informal, my public, my private communication, my planned and spontaneous communication, all of that contributes to how our faculty, staff, students, community, alumni, trustees, chancellor, staff, donors, media, public officials, and others see Cal State Northridge. This awareness of the centrality of your communication to people's understanding of information technology is so critical to what it is you do. A great scholar of U.S. higher education, a faculty member named, scholar named Robert Birnbaum, offers this description of what presidents do. Presidents provide interpretive leadership when they change perceptions by highlighting some aspect of an institution while muting others, by relating new ideas to existing values and symbols, and by articulating a vision of the university in idealized form that captures what others believe but have been unable to realize. Now let me do a very colloquial translation of this. Birnbaum is really describing the role of the president as the director and producer of a sound and light show. A sound and light show takes place usually in some historic or wonderful, majestic area where there have been great events that have taken place. The audience members sit in the dark, and then there's either light or sound, sometimes smell, sometimes movement through that physical space. The light might obscure something that had been in darkness, so the light pops it and brings it out. Color brings a different hue to what was already present. Sound stands for, amplifies, provides meaning to the environment that you're looking at. Sound and light shows change tonality, volume, and rhythm, and it adds both understanding and emotion, affect. This is what presidents do with their universities. I never talk about California State University, Northridge, without saying we're a regionally focused university. That is my spotlight. I add color. I add hue. I sometimes add sound and detail with other aspects of our story. So think about the sound and light show that your college or university president is creating about your institution. Ask yourself how you can make that reality more vivid, more real, more compelling through your communication with faculty, staff, and students. Be part of the team that creates the sound and light show for your university. Now, my session on presidential communication always as well talks about the basic issues of vocabulary. There are concrete terms that we use regularly that have multiple meanings because the meanings of words are in other people's heads. They're not in ours. If I say conference to you, are you thinking about this EDUCAUSE conference? Are you thinking about next year's? Are you thinking about a totally different conference? My point is that concrete words have different meanings among people. So when we move to information technology, we are presented, those of us who are not IT professionals, with words that mean something to all of you, but they may not have the same meaning to me. Try the word easier. Try the word user-friendly. I looked at the notes for Gary's presentation, and I was introduced to new words like disintermediates, sourcing. Cloud I sort of get at this point, but I really had to work hard to get sourcing. I asked you to speak in ways that allow translation between your world and the world of the rest of us. My final thought this morning is to also acknowledge that while I sound like I'm in charge at Cal State Northridge, aided by our very capable vice presidents and their staff, I do want to acknowledge that the behavior of faculty, staff, and most importantly, students is very quickly changing what it is we are doing. I'll give you an example. The first day of the fall semester, 2010, we had almost 100% increase in the number of wireless device users on our campus. You could see students walking across our campus with their mobile devices, I won't use a specific name, looking up their class schedule. They hadn't printed that schedule. They were getting it just in time. So, while I'd like to say I'm in charge, along with my capable vice presidents, my confessions remain central to how I fulfill this role. Despite my knowledge and experience and leading and dealing with information technology, it's very clear that I cannot become complacent. You've heard my confessions. I've offered you my advice. The final comment I have to all of you is to say to you, it's appropriate that we're gathered here at Disneyland because all of you have the e-ticket for the University of the Future. When Disneyland was first opened to the public, when you paid your admission, you got different color and labeled tickets. The e-ticket, I'm told this, I never was here, but the e-ticket was for those rides with the greatest thrill. All of you in information technology have an e-ticket for our university's future. Enjoy the ride.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.